Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, guys. It's Nickalicious all by myself here in the Brohio Studios in the Cream Spot. Just a forewarning for this episode. Tony Rod Riggs was the subject of our interview. If you want to go back to the episode before this, the 20 and Back Space Program, where we detail all of his travelings and all of those involved with the 20 and Space Program, feel free to do that. But in this episode, we talk to Tony Rod Riggs about his travels and the 20 and Back Program. 20 and Back Secret Space Program. One of the things that he alludes to is that ever since that he's come forward with his story, he's had problems with technology rather consistently. We were fighting an audio bug throughout this where there were some gaps in what he was saying. If you guys can just cut us some slack on that one, this would have literally taken me days to edit, but in an effort to get this out in a timely manner, I think we're just going to launch it without all the cutty, choppy, choppy on all of it. It's not that bad. It's just some drops in audio. I'm being way harder on myself than I should be. But the only thing that should be hard right now is your pee-pees for this interview with our subject, our interviewee, secret space program participant, Tony Rod Riggs. Enjoy the episode. Enjoy the interview. And oh yeah, maybe a quick word from a couple of our sponsors so we can make that money. Thank you so much for your patience.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right, we're here with our special guest for this interview, Tony Rod Riggs. We've already asked him how he's doing. He says he's doing wonderfully right now. Am I correct, Tony?
Yeah, I'm doing great.
Just want to make sure nothing changed.
Yeah, things have been good.
Good.
And just so... Go ahead.
And these days, I'm just happy to not have a fever.
Oh, man.
You're telling us. I'm sick of my freaking kids, honestly. And I know that, how often do you listen to your interviews after you give them, Tony?
I don't like to see myself I don't study even the, you know, there's a culture around the secret space program and the whole ufology field. But a lot of people reach out to me and talk to me for advice and what, you know, how I feel, but I don't study it. I don't watch other, people send me links all the time. I really don't watch any of it.
Probably
because
tired of it.
If I see something that reminds me of something and then I speak about it, then it looks like I stole it.
Sure, I understand.
And so I've got to keep, my information as as organic as possible without blending it with other people that have stepped forward. So,
okay. Well, here's, now you've obviously never listened to our show, but Tony, I just want to say we are a couple shitheads, but we are really good guys. And if you, and after watching some of your interviews,
we try,
I feel like you are dialed back. Like you are trying to restrict yourself from being the true Tony. I feel like you have a really good sense of humor and you have a really good perspective on things. So if that sense of humor and that odd, if you like have a, even a dark sense of humor, if any of that has to shine through on this episode, you're more than welcome to let any of that shine through, Tony.
Yeah,
I sometimes do dial it back because I've got a lot of sarcasm. You know, there are times when I post with people on Facebook that I don't really, they friend me because they see an interview, but they don't really know me. Yeah. And I really catch a lot of heck flack sometimes for my humor being dark.
Oh yeah, man, you shared a meme like today or yesterday, and I saw it and I said, man, this guy's great. I stole the meme. I don't remember what it was. It was I don't remember what it was. But that's just,
yeah, we're completely unorthodox and not, I mean, when we do interview episodes, it's a lot more formal as opposed to what our normal episodes are. Our normal episodes are just a complete train wreck, but
say the least.
it gets crazy, but you know, we try to stay on the straight and narrow for interviews, but still have that, you know, laid back vibe.
Okay. And to fill them in, it was a meme. It was Bane from Batman. And it says, young, naive National Guardsman trying to enforce martial law. And then there's the guy in the pink suit that says, me with a super soaker full of LSD. And then it's like, the screen's all fuzzy.
Yeah.
And I said, that's absolutely.
Well, and it's worth being said that meme is got a rainbow effect to it. It's
yeah,
it's perfect,
and it's fitting.
And but that's the thing, Tony, is we're weird. We talk about all of the darkness in the world. We talk about all the weird things, but then occasionally it circles back to like bathroom and middle school humor, which we're really good at that. It's
our bread and butter.
I'll tell you what. It's today. So many people. I mean, you know, to take that to a serious note. So many people today are so scared of mankind, or at least the majority of people in the United States and people in first world countries have lived and grown up in a system that works for them. And as long, you know what I mean? Like, as long as you did what you were told, you were going to be safe and prosperous.
Right.
Right. And all these people are starting to see cracks in that system.
Yeah.
And it's really breaking down. It's really, people are really circling the wagons right now because they're completely out of their routine.
They have no idea what to do.
Yes. And people in general are just not lightening up. And you know what? It seems like the powers that be are really ratcheting it up. Like, they're turning up the racist undertones.
Mm-hmm,
they're turning up
definitely.
The sexist undertones.
Oh yeah.
Really, everybody is pitted against everybody right now. If you're somebody that only watches social media or YouTube or whatever it is, whatever media platform that
most of everyone in the world, yeah.
Yeah, you'll be scared and angry. And
and see, I think that you can use this
to lighten up. We don't disagree.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just saying, if you and I completely radically disagreed on politics, you know, if you were a Trump hater or a lover and I was the opposite, we should still be able to joke and get along and have a discussion.
Yeah.
But that just doesn't exist anymore.
No,
I mean,
doesn't.
People are just livid. As soon as you say two words, they're just way too angry. And I feel anybody that's that angry should remove themselves from the discussion until they get it on hold, because it's the programming. It's a form of programming they've used. And I don't blame them. It works.
Your words are perfect right now.
Right. It's so crazy. It really is. And what I was saying was like, it's funny because if you look at the pretty much like the beginning of this whole pandemic and all the craziness that ensued because of it, like, no wonder why, you know, if the government knows about aliens, no wonder why they haven't told us they're fucking real.
Yeah.
Look, can you imagine how we would react if we're
at... Yeah, we can't fucking handle it.
No, some people can, but the majority of people can't.
Okay.
People can handle it, I think, but people have been taught to not.
Right.
You know, I've talked about it quite a bit, too, about some of the programming that they've done. just to make people laugh about the subject. And the thing is, what I guess the first biggest, hardest pill to swallow is that we have all been programmed for a long time.
It's,
I would say that's definitely accurate.
It's very accurate.
Yeah, you know, the ufology field in general is proof, because the discussion doesn't go very far, no matter who you're with. If you're with somebody that doesn't, anybody that's in the ufology field really that researches it, and I found that my audience, people that deal with, even if they've never had anything major happen to them, have always had something happen, or a friend of theirs, you know, like.
Sure.
People that have seen something that they weren't supposed to see, or had an experience they weren't supposed to experience, are the audience.
Right.
The else basically doesn't believe in it because they're programmed not to.
I can understand that.
Do you get what I mean? Like,
I feel
I always ask people when they talk to me, they ask me questions, and people contact me and they ask questions and stuff. And I always say, well, what happened to you?
Yeah.
They go, wow. Well, when I was, and then it starts, and then
sure.
Usually they saw something, or their uncle had something happen, or they woke up out in the street one day. You know, like
yeah.
Everybody has anybody that's really interested in the subject because of the social program, because the programming is such a giggle factor. You know that that anybody that just a passerby would look at ufology and they're programmed to laugh at it.
You're absolutely right. And then you got the weirdos like Rob and I that have never experienced anything extraterrestrial, yet here we are.
We just want to believe.
Flying our freak flag, Tony.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know what? Then I bet you guys have talked to other people that were very credible.
We've talked to a lot of people that. And here's my thing, Tony. But in the same breath that you said, sometimes you just have to. We should be able to get along no matter what our differences are. And it doesn't matter what you believe in or what plan you subscribe to. You and I can still be friends. But then in the same breath, what I'm saying is, who am I to tell someone that their story isn't credible or their story isn't what it seems? Because there's been a lot of weird things that have happened to me in my life, not necessarily paranormal or anything like that. There's just been weird shit that's happened to me, and it sounds far-fetched when I tell the story, but in my mind, I know that it happened, and there's no reason that I have to beg someone to believe me, because at the end of the day, right. The only person I have to answer to is myself. Well, my wife, kind of a little bit, but I have to answer to myself. As long as I'm true to myself, then we're fine.
Yeah, and I think most people have some kind of weird... I think a lot of people have a lot of... I think everybody, you know, has a lot of very impossible or very, you know, psychic things. They dream the future. They have a hunch like, it's going to, every day I always go right. But just today I went left and lo and behold, I saw that accident, saved that guy.
Sure.
You know, like everybody literally across the board has that. But because your day to day is such a thing that people just carry on and they don't think it's a big deal. Like when things happen that aren't really supposed to happen.
You're absolutely right. Well, let's dig into your story, Tony, if that's okay with you. We've got, and like we said, we're not going to make you start from the very beginning. We've got some questions that go along with your story, and just to kind of give you the floor on some of this stuff. But
it was a long time, so really it turns out being several stories because there were several places that I was.
Oh, yeah. We're not going to be able to cover all of it in this episode because we do one to 2 hour episode per week, and we're just not going to be able to cover your you have probably never covered in detail the entire depth of every single thing that you've gone through. So for us to ask you to do that and
hold up on writing a book.
Right. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and we'll get to that later. But for you to tell everything in 30 to 40 minutes wouldn't be fair to you or your experiences. But first off, my first question, after you woke up from the surgery, so you said that you were taken onto, whenever you were first abducted, you were taken onto a craft and they put the latex sheet over you. You said when you woke up, you were at an airbase and you were immediately subjected to MK Ultra style trauma training. I guess this was the airbase in California. I can't remember it off the top of my head.
Inukern Air Base.
Okay, yeah.
Well, it's an airfield. It's not. It's next to China Lake.
Okay. What kind of tactics were they using as far as the trauma-based training with the MK Ultra, the MK Ultra style trauma-based training? What kind of tactics were they using on you?
Well, so it began with just movies, like drugs and movies. And then it was a helmet with electrodes on each side that would shock you as the movie changed. Like, you know, they were traumatic movies too. They were like Disney cartoons, and then it would go to news clips of war and wow. and like the hostage situation in Israel when that one plane got hijacked. It was that. And then the movie would switch to animals being butchered, and then back to Disney, to Alice in Wonderland. And during that time, it would play stuff, and there were like subliminal messages flashing.
That's what I was getting ready to say. Sort of like subliminal messaging.
Yeah, but not even that subtle.
Okay.
Like obvious that they were obvious that there were words flashing that you couldn't read because they were so fast.
Oh wow!
And the helmet. There was a helmet that each side of it had four electrodes on each side, and they would fire in different sequence. So when the movie changed, a different set of electrodes would change. So they were changing thought pattern. Or however your brain works, whatever. I don't know the technical, but that's kind of what the doctor. We were hanging, and the chairs hung like swing sets from the ceiling, and you couldn't get out of it. And it would just play. Jesus. The movie was on a reel to reel, and it would play till it ended, and then it would rewind and play again. And that was the entire day.
Ugh.
And that went for weeks. And then in between the movies, he would take us out. And there were times when it would cause pain. That he put us the thing in. You know, some people got my arm dislocated and then Jesus. Put back. And then at the end of the day, at every single day, he would pull us back in the office one by one and ask you questions. How do you feel? Like, it was very very scientific and very sure. matter of fact. He wasn't there was no emotional. He was conducting an experiment and was very matter of fact, kind of detached from what was going on.
At that point, did you know that you were part? It's so crazy for me to ask you these questions. Like, I don't know how vivid these memories are for you. Can you talk a little bit about that? How are these more of like a foggy memory, or are these exceptionally vivid to you?
Well, okay, so the memory process in the beginning was kind of overwhelming because they all came at once, kind of, you know, like.
Wow.
It was like, it felt like the memories were always there, but I kind of ignored them. And then once I realized a few of them were real, then all of them came. And I went, oh my God, that happened. And
yeah.
I went, oh my God, that happened too. And they kind of unpacked, I guess. I don't know how to say it. It was a realization there. And all in the beginning, all the only clear memories were the emotional ones, like times that were very heavily vested emotionally. Those were the clear memories. And over time, the little stuff, the mundane stuff, I've remembered.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So they're pretty clear, man. So I went back to Seattle and to the house during that time. So these were memory things I remembered. I found the house on 2016, and what I found was that I expected my memories to be a little off. I expected to not be accurate. Like, I was going to go there, but it turned out that I, even though I can prove with witnesses, my mom and my sister and my family, that I've never been there in my life, in my organic right. life. I knew the store. I knew where the candy was in the store. I knew the beach. I knew where the rocks were on the beach. There's a little lighthouse, not a lighthouse, but like an electric generator house place yeah. there. And I knew it. I knew the whole place. I took a shorter route than Google Maps gave me to the house.
Wow. So, and this is... So,
you know what I mean?
And this
my
is
my memories
like...
there. When I went on that trip to that place where I wasn't supposed to go, somewhere I lived in a 20 and back, dualistically, while I was living in Michigan in the 80s too, simultaneously, my memories of that place were freakishly accurate. So... it was at that point that I really felt comfortable to speak about it. That was when I kind of was like, you know, now if somebody asked me, I can kind of talk about it. Because before that, you know, I was hoping that I was wrong.
Right.
Okay.
Really, I was hoping that something was wrong, that there was another, that it was like a super dream or some kind of, you know, I don't know, implanted stuff. I don't be right. But it turns out that every time I went and found something that was provable to prove me wrong. It was the opposite. It proved me right. So,
wow.
At that point, I said, "Wow, I got to trust the space memories too, the space program memories too." You know.
Jeez. What were you going to ask, Rob?
He kind of answered the question. I was going to say, in this, the whole, when you were just referring back to your Seattle trip, that was in reference to what your, that's, I don't know how to exactly say it, what your other self memories, what you're pulling from, not your Michigan state, but right. Your Seattle state,
not my organic memories, but a 20 and back memory.
Right. There you go. 20 and back memory. Okay.
And I think I heard in the interviews, you referred to that as, just so there's no confusion, that's your Jerry self, correct?
Yeah.
So they had called me different names all the time when I went from one place to another. And it's, you know, like, it was a 6-digit number. So I always had trouble remembering it. I had trouble with the numbers, but I eventually, at the end, my last few years, they named me Jerry, G-E-R-I.
Okay.
After the German word gerüstet, which means burnt or oxidized, because I got in a bad accident and was burnt. So they called me gerüstet, but the American crew on the ship coined Jerry. They just called me Jerry.
We called my little brother Lumpy growing up because he always fell and hit his head, and his head was always lumpy.
Right. Yeah, basically same thing.
Jesus. Oh, God. And that's kind of, and you use, when you're trying to explain your story, it's easier for you to refer to
only that, but people I've worked with. So I've not everybody has a lot of solid memories of a 20 and back, but I have talked to quite a few, dozens and dozens of people that I've actually been able to complete timelines and support very strongly that they were on a 20 and back as well. And what I've done is, you know, I like to sit with people and I go, look, let's sort it out. What's your middle name? And whatever, Johnny. And then what's your first, you know, let's say, I'm just making this up, saying first name's Matt. Yeah. So I would call his organic life, you know, his real life, it's down here.
Right.
I would always refer to Matt. And then his time in the space program, after he was taken, that person, we'd call him Johnny. Because there's usually a behavior change at the end of the 20 years when the other one dies.
Okay.
There's usually a behavior change. For myself, I kind of got my act together. I was kind of a basket case in my regular life right up until the day. Like one day, it was in 99. So I woke up and I went, oh, my God, it's over. And I didn't know what I was talking about.
Jesus.
But I felt like a million bucks. I felt like I had never felt before. And like a lot of emotional problems went away. It was all in one morning. I just woke up that morning and I went, it's over.
It was just kind of like the veil lifted.
Yeah, like, you know, like some part of me was missing. It's hard to explain without going into a whole ton of detail, but basically that's what happened. And I found that a lot of other people, I've worked with people that were very, had a very strong case for 20 and back. And then I go, and I said, they said, well, look, I was taken in 93. And I go, well, then what happened here? When was that? And I fast forward, I go, well, where were you in 2003? What happened? Or 2013, what happened? And they go, oh, my God, that's when I got, you know, blah, 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 blah. That's when everything came together for me.
Sure.
And they, you know what I mean? Like, it's in itself a form of evidence.
Okay. I can definitely, it's just profound to try and process everything that, there's just so much to go along with everything that you've gone through, Tony. It's just for someone that hasn't lived it, it's a lot to process, you know?
Sure. And well, look, and this is things like this are just behind the threshold of a disclosure.
Yes.
In other words, a disclosure of bacteria in space is not a disclosure.
No.
I'm talking about a disclosure, like, contact with advanced civilizations, like coming down and saying, hi, this is us. Here's our internet. You can log on to this. Here you are. And this is pictures of our world. And
here's my Netflix password.
Netflix, right? You're going to like it. But I mean like a real disclosure, like a disclosure of what really is possible out there. And I think that like what we talked about earlier, that because we've been programmed in the other direction, that it's going to be it's more painful than it should be. Like, sure. They should be able to just come down and tell us, and people should be open-minded and handle it. And let other people live, let other civilizations live the way. But we've been so herded into a control mechanism that it's gonna hurt. How the rest of the universe is getting on.
Yeah. Oh God. Well, that to try and stay in line with your chronological story here, I'm gonna go back to, I guess it was, we'll call him the Seattle billionaire. He was kind of like your owner at one point.
He literally owned me. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Myself and other kids. So he had access to these programs, and like the MK Ultra program, the reason it was in Inukern was because they rented the space there.
Yeah.
It was on a shoestring budget. It wasn't a professional operation at all. It was, you know, I always told people that's just like somebody that had access to the Coca-Cola factory and a limited edition Coca-Cola came through. And at the end they said, hey, you know what, give me a couple cases too. And they ran those through extra with what was left. And that's kind of what happened that's what I was.
Okay.
We were personnel. Us kids were personnel. They got ran through after they closed the program. They ran a few more dozen kids through.
Okay. And that, well, in relation to, and I'm completely enamored and fascinated with the Pizzagate and the Pettigate and all the different stuff dealing with. Our most downloaded episode is our Clinton body count episode, where we go over all the bodies linked to the Clintons. Clintons. And yeah. As far as your, I guess your the sex trade that you were a slave to, do you specifically remember the Clintons at all during your 20 and back at all?
No.
Okay. And
if you know what, it's dangerous to drop names.
No, I know.
But
it's fine.
I will say this, that when I came forward in 2015, it was May of 2015 when I really got my memories back, when they all made sense. I had memories before that, but they didn't make any sense. Like the big, you know, recall happened in May of 15. So it was 16. I did my September of 16. I did my interviews, but I had worked with researchers that year. At that point, there was nobody that was connecting the secret space program with Satanism or the Pedogate stuff.
Right.
And so I was on record with that. And then it was 17, I think, or the end of 16 was when the email scandal happened and the Hillary, like that's when the Pedogate stuff happened. And it turned out to be a very validating thing for me, unfortunately.
Right.
But, you know, as to my knowledge, I was one of the first people that talked about it. Like I talked about it, and then it came out on the mainstream as something.
Right. And if you do, Tony, if you do feel like that you need to drop some names on this podcast, this is the place to do it, buddy, okay? We've only been taken off the internet twice.
The thing, I've given names to some independent government agencies that have worked with me privately and with researchers that have been passed on to people in positions of authority. So it's not like I'm protecting people that are pedophiles. I pass the names on to people that I feel are credible.
Sure.
But I don't want to go out publicly and say that because a lot of bad things can happen
to
myself and my family. And there are innocent, like I could say somebody's name and they could have kids that are not involved that could be victimized. So that's kind of why I don't. I get a lot of flack. Really, that's one of the biggest complaints I get from people that are mad. They're like, how can you enable this?
And, no. You don't want to die. That's why
it's called covering your ass.
Yeah, I kind of don't want to die.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's my next question. Have you ever felt like your life has been in jeopardy, or do you feel like you've had eyes watching you that weren't necessarily there before you started telling me your story?
I haven't had stable electronics since 2016, man.
I'm noticing that as we interview you.
No, seriously, I haven't had. I did a TV show. It was in Seattle, and they had a full on, you know, $1 million studio.
Sure.
And they were, it was like I Skyped in on TV, and their whole studio shut down when I logged on. They said it never happened before. And this was like big equipment. And that happened for 6 months. Every time I did an interview, like there was a technical difficulty. It followed me. I have my phone hacked regularly. I have to I do my I factory reset my phone like once every other month.
Holy shit, damn.
I get hacked constantly. I get hacked.
It sounds like Rob's phone is a piece of shit.
Like, I went out in my yard and looked up and you see the stars and all of a sudden one star will just shoot that was sitting still, will just fly away.
Oh, no way.
I've had that quite a bit. Last summer, the summer before, it happened quite a bit. And I mean, so as far as danger, I kind of feel like after what happened to me,
you've already went through the danger.
Yeah, I kind of feel like, you know, there's that. And then the one thing is that, you know, by this point, if anything bad happened to me, it would just validate it.
Yeah.
God, so there is a point right about of that. Exposure where, you know, when you speak about these things, because I've worked with other people, they're like, man, am I going to get offed here? Knowing this stuff that you're telling me? And I'm like, well, you know,
I don't know.
Go talk about it publicly and you'll probably be safe.
Oh, man. Now, whatever. And like I said, I just want to remind you that we've covered we've touched on most of the stuff that your timeline here. And one of the things that we talk about is the adrenochrome that this billionaire, the person that owns you. Can you take us through one of the extraction rituals that you observed while you were there in Seattle?
You know, it's funny because I think just in the last 2 weeks, I've been asked that question a lot more than ever before.
Okay.
And I feel that these people have gotten away with these crimes just because of strict secrecy, that they've kept Absolutely. It secret for so long that they've gotten away with it. And I feel that speaking about it is important, that, you know, people know what they're doing.
Yeah.
But, you know, there is a part of me that really worries that somebody will try to copycat, you know?
Yeah.
What happened? Man, I don't know where to start. What happened was, it was like a communion.
Yeah.
Like what Christianity celebrates in communion. It was kind of the same ritual, only they were butt naked with animal head masks on.
The men were butt naked?
Everybody was naked except for us kids. We had like a hospital gown on and an IV we had an IV stuck in our arm, you know, on the thing that you can roll.
Yeah.
The little stand that we had those, and there were three kids.
Was that kind of like to keep you numb, like to keep you sedated?
No, they administered a drug after the ritual was over that put us out, and I guess it brought us near to death, close to death, and they could channel and talk to other beings.
Jesus, okay.
Who knows? I don't know what they could do
exactly
with it, but it was very important to them at the time. It was a very, I guess, high-tech thing for them.
Yeah.
So we went in, and he had sacrificed a little boy that was much younger than me and drained his blood into a bucket, and he had a little burner on the altar. He had cut up parts of him and made, and it went like a communion where you had to drink some and eat some of them. And then he had mumbo jumbo. He had a fancy knife, and there were artifacts, like things that like when you see in a fancy church, you know, like
right.
engraved metal gold things. He had, but it was basically in his basement of his house.
Yeah.
It was a room. It was painted, and the carpet was red, and the whole room was red.
That makes it a little easier to clean up stains and stuff.
Yeah, and that's
kind of
went down.
Oh God, I think I remember hearing that you were made to partake in this. I guess we'll call it communion as well.
So the kid they brought the kids. There was two adult women and one male, and us three kids. So there were six of us all together. They brought us in. They brought the kids in one at a time, and I was the last one in. So. I mean, I forget exactly how he worded it, but, you know, he was very matter of fact. He's like, hi. And he told me his name, and he's standing, and I'm looking, you know, I was the equivalent of 10 years old at the time.
Yeah.
And so I was like half his height. I'm standing there with a butt naked grown man looking, and he had the Baphomet head on mask.
Okay.
And he, you know, leaned over, and he's talking to me. I mean, you can't get more, you know, I wasn't prepared for that.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I mean, if you can understand how in shock I was. And then on top of that, that was like my first dead body, I'm pretty sure,
yeah.
I ever saw in my life.
Yeah.
In both lives. That was the first time I saw a dead person.
Jeez.
And I was just in complete shock. And he asked me, you know, do you believe in God? And I just kind of was like, nodded my head yes. And he said, well, ask for your God to save you now. He's like, make your God come down here and punish me for this. You know, like he was testing it. And I didn't know what to say.
Wow.
What's funny is that during that time, I consciously knew that when I was older, if I was older, that I would have the right words to say to make him look stupid.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like I knew that everything he was telling me was somebody out there could make him look stupid,
right,
if they knew that. But I just didn't have that knowledge. And so I just sat there silent and kind of took the abuse. And then he was like, he said, you're going to have some of this. You got to drink this. Do you want to? And I said, I didn't say no. I shook my head no. I just sat there paralyzed. Really, yeah. I was in fear for my life. And he said, you know, if you don't participate in this, you're going to go right up here next to him and I'll kill you. It makes no difference to me. Even though you're too old to make any difference to me, I'll just put you up here and kill you too. It makes no difference. Whether you're either going to do this or you're going to die. And so that's something you don't forget. I don't care what they do to you.
Yeah.
That's a fear, emotion. Of actual, you know what I mean? I don't know how many, if you guys have had a near-death experience or someone put a gun in your face before. Those are things you don't forget.
And yeah.
The girl, so I stood there. I sat there silent, and he was like, okay, well, then you can get you up here. Like, I just stood there silent because I wanted, like, I'll tell you this. I wanted with all my heart and soul to tell him to fuck off. I wanted to say the right words, and I just didn't know him. I was a kid.
I don't let my kids say fuck.
I was livid. I was on the inside, on top, inside all my fear. I was livid because I knew that he was wrong.
Yeah, absolutely.
You get what I mean? And so the girl spoke up and she goes, look, just do it. I don't believe in any of this stuff either way. And she was my age too. She was a little girl. And she goes, just do it. Nothing. She goes, I did it. Nothing happens. And so I did. And, you know, it's like, had some, and then he goes, now that you've done this, your God will never accept you. You're totally forsaken. You know, it was like bullshit. And then he did like some mumbo jumbo and kept it, and they finished up basically their, you know, it was like he went on with a ritual, with a script. He went back on script after that.
Jesus. Okay. When you... And after that, after you went to the moon, initially you talk about some kind of training exercises you participated in right off the bat, where they arm you with like a grenade and you went through training exercises in an arena. Well,
yeah, tell us. That was much later.
Okay.
That was a period of years. Like after that ritual, I went to Peru and did those years there and then went back and then went through the sex trade stuff and then went to the moon.
Okay.
Well, was sold off into the military was how they, that's how his wife put it. You're being sold to the military.
Okay. Tell us about these bugs. This is fascinating. And I just want to know more about these bugs that you were speaking about.
So you're talking about the moon instance.
Yeah. Well, I guess in my, research, you talk about, you were taken into an arena for like training, and there was one kid that detonated, I guess, his explosive, and you assume that he maybe lived, maybe died. You weren't sure, but the training
was more of the same, like the, you know, like the movies with drugs and movies, but it was on the moon, and it was a taller gray looking, but it was a white, more of a white, not gray, a taller gray looking ET was the teacher, had plugged us into a machine, and it was a, you know, like a better setup than what the was on Inukern, but it was the same technique. It was trauma-based mind control, and what it did was it you know, like, it's not like they showed me how to work a gun. It was training on fight or flight response.
Right.
Never run, always fight, even if you have to give your life. And it was like over and over again. It was like, and they would give you choices. They would, like, movies would play. What should you do? And you just had to look at the screen for a few seconds, and there were two squares would pop up on the screen. And when you looked at one for a few seconds, it would select that answer. And then it would play out that part, the end of that movie, and tell you what you did or right. You know what I'm saying? And after a while, you got to the point where you always chose to sacrifice yourself for somebody, for whatever the purpose was.
I got you.
So they flew us to a separate base. You know, we were at one base in the back of the moon. They flew us to a separate one, and then it looked like people in uniform, more of a military kind of uniform, and they walked us to an arena, and which was about the size of a basketball court. And it was concrete walls on the side, and there was a crowd above it, and there was about 3 inches of sand in for the floor. And they gave us a canister. It looked like a little canister, like a, you know, like a bug spray bomber size canister.
Yeah,
and the button, he said, once you go through the door, it'll be armed, and that button will instantly detonate if you hit it. There's no timer. As soon as you hit the button, it will detonate. So
okay.
If you get the chance, you should sacrifice yourself to save everybody else. This was our little briefing.
Okay.
And then the door opened. We went in, and they closed the door behind us, and you could hear the crowd kind of yelling at. They let a giant bug in the other side, and it was, when I say giant, I mean, you know, at first, I'm a person that tends to exaggerate, like if I get a dent on my car and then I think about it for a few days, in my mind, it's a much larger dent than what it is.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah,
totally.
So the bug was still about the size of a car or
Jesus.
At least a motorcycle. At least, you know, like it was like Harley Davidson sized.
Can you liken it to any earthly bug? It looked like an ant or maybe.
It was like an ant spider. I've got a pretty good artist rendition. I mean, I could send you. I worked with a really talented artist, and he got a good picture of it. But
sure.
it had a bunch of legs coming out the front of it, like that it could use. And it was very quiet. It would stand up, and it made noise like a, you know, like imagine if you were beating a tree with a stick,
yeah,
kind of noise.
Okay,
like a bark, and it quiet. And when it moved, it was silent. It was super quiet. And then it would stand up again and make that noise, you know, the bark, and then get closer. It was scared too, I think.
Okay.
Because there was a good dozen of us, and we all huddled together. And like you said, one of us ran up and detonated that thing, and it blew himself in half and blew the bug's head into pieces.
Jesus.
Blew a good chunk out of it. And it worked. So the crowd went wild, and people came in with lab coats. Ran in. I heard that kid lived, even though he didn't join us on the next part of the assignment.
Sure. God, I do talk about that and how there was some type of regenerative science they had where they could regrow limbs and essentially, I guess, I don't know if they were necessarily bringing you guys back from the dead, but they were regrowing. They had the science to regrow limbs.
Yeah. They were pretty confident that they could fix you. You know what
okay.
I mean? Like that was part of the training that, you know, you would be okay kind of thing.
Yeah.
Even though I you know, I never really
tested it.
Are you guys there?
Yeah, I'm still there.
Oh, I see.
Sorry, kind of bugged out there for a second.
Sure.
Okay. We'll hop on our next question here. When in your day-to-day life, how often do you talk about your experiences with strangers? I guess water cooler talk at work. How often do you have to like pop your head up and say, aliens? You know, I have a story about aliens. Is it kind of hard to get that stuff out of you?
Zero.
Okay.
I'll tell you why. Because I learned very very early on after I went public with my story that to tell somebody to you know, like I felt pretty confident. Like I wanted to tell people.
Yeah.
And the first few people that were interested that asked me about it, and I don't know. I just feel like if you force this information on somebody and I come at somebody with, and then I have all my evidence and all my stuff. In order to believe me, the average person, the average American person has to unbelieve something important.
Yeah, I can see that.
You get what I mean?
And yeah.
So in order to force it on somebody, like, yeah, well, I'm Tony Rodriguez. You can look me up. Go check out my YouTube. Like, I did that once. And it was more of a violation to that person. It's not
yeah.
cool.
Okay.
You get what I mean? Like people, you have to learn your own beliefs. You can't have somebody tell you what to believe.
You're right.
I mean, is. Now, I worked at an insurance company, and we all went out to lunch one day, like, you know, 10 guys, probably 10 of us. And they started talking about the Netflix show, The Bob Lazar Show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And these guys are all like skeptics. Like, what do you think about that? You think there's really aliens? And I smirked. I was sitting there like trying to contain myself. I'm thinking, you guys are having lunch with me.
Like, if only you knew.
Yeah, right. That's exactly. It was surreal. I was like, if you only knew, you know what I mean? What I've been through. I sat there and I didn't say anything. I dropped a few breadcrumbs that they didn't pick up.
Okay.
Because I was like the new guy. So they were like, huh? You know, but I tried. I've tried. And with other people, you know, at another job, I drop breadcrumbs for people. And if they're not interested, they don't follow up, you know, but anybody that asks me, then I'll talk about freely. You know what I mean? But I feel that people, something this big, this much unbelieving is kind of not cool. You know? Yeah,
I understand. Definitely see that. So we can move away from your story for a moment, and we can start hitting you with some more, I guess, more of your opinions that go along with.
Well, I got plenty of those
based off of experience, life experiences.
I got tons of those. I got tons of opinions.
Well, perfect.
Great.
Now, when do you think the ETs or the aliens, whatever you want to call them, will start to interject more than what they have in our society? For instance, I know that, I guess, our progression with nuclear technology, I guess, probably perked their ears up a little more than normal. But when do you think they will start to interject in humanity as we know it more than what they have already?
Oh, we're already there. So do you have to wear a mask to go shopping?
When I went to Costco yesterday, I did. Yes, sir.
You got to wash your hands and wear a mask. So not only are we fighting the coronavirus, but also all viruses are being killed right now. Like, the world is literally being sterilized. You realize that?
I've also in the other breath, in the heat of debate, I've also thought about the fact that we're making ourselves, and the only way for this to work is for us to maintain this cleanliness. And I'll be honest with you, Tony, I've stopped washing my fucking hands as much as I did in the very beginning. It's just not because I'm nasty. I'm just like, I don't think I need to wash my hands after when I've been in my house. I haven't gone anywhere. I don't need to wash. And I think a lot of people are going to get lazier with this stuff. And we would have to maintain a perfect pristine environment to eradicate everything. And I think,
I'm 48 years old, and I got to say, for the last 10 years, all I've wanted for Christmas was some antibiotics, because I've had a bad cold every year. I've had nothing but cold symptoms, you know, this or that, even just a runny nose or a sniffle or a sore throat, like on and on. Like, there's always a virus. And I feel like since we started doing this stuff and the lockdown, this is the healthiest I've been as far as the symptoms not being here. And it's dawned on me that, you know, if you're going to invite ETs from another world that are healthy down to your planet, I mean, wouldn't you want to get rid of the virus, the airborne viruses? And that's what we're doing. I mean, I'm not trying to paint this thing as some positive, you know what I mean? What it's not. I'm just saying, when you look at the results, like, the world is being greatly sterilized.
It is. It's like,
as we speak,
it's like cleaning out an operating room in prep for surgery for something like
that. It's being sterilized. Yes, exactly. I mean, it's the months ago, 3-4 months ago. And I think the aliens are interjecting, the ETs, excuse me, are interjecting a lot. I think that, here's my opinion, right?
Okay.
I think the original plan was back in the moon, the Apollo, during Apollo, the original plan was to publicly find evidence of ET life on the moon. Okay. So they were going to put the astronauts there, and they were going to go, look at this, it's an obelisk. Who did this? And then at that moment, literally that moment, somebody can fly up and go, well, now you found us. Here we are. We're gonna contact you. We open up a discourse with your civilization. We've waited for you to mature to this level. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's like a very Little House on the Prairie kind of rated G version of it. I think that was the original plan. And I think that ET stepped in and nixed it. And they, you know what I mean? They killed Kennedy, and then they just nixed that plan. But it was already in motion. When Kennedy put it in motion. So they just went through with it, and that was the end of it. And now I think we've had a lot of developments happen in space, in the space program. I think that a lot of things happened since in the last 7 or 8 years where they've really, so we're going to, and so now they're going back to the moon.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Yeah. I think they've just resumed the same exact plan they had planned, and we're gonna have boots on the moon from, you know what I mean, on television in 2024 is the plan. And I think sometime after that, we're going to get a disclosure. It's my opinion only. I don't have any kind of inside thing, but my opinion that they're going to go there to the South Pole and they're going to find evidence of a civilization. And at that point, a civilization is going, that's the excuse we needed to contact you. Here we are.
Okay.
And boom, that's going to be the original disclosure. That's going to be the opening chess move of that whole thing.
Wow. I hope, and I honestly hope that whenever it does happen, if it ever happens, and when it does, I hope it is a giant. I hope it is a step in the right direction for mankind, as far as making us, you know, better and stronger as a society. Because I don't feel like there's no reason why we couldn't work together.
Look,
but I hope
without a doubt, I can tell you right now that. I want to choose my words here carefully, that in my experience, when I was on Ceres Colony and I came across other species, the ones that were the spacefaring, that had basically the ones that are in the know, you're either in the know as a species or you're not. Planets that were not, we went down and plundered them.
Okay.
People that are in the know are far better off than we are.
Okay.
They're, I mean, it's night and day. It's you know, to put it in terms of how when you say like us as a species of the planet, we better off, like we'll be as much better off as we are today versus us back in the 1600s. It's that kind of advancements we're going to get.
Yeah, I would think that their technology obviously would be, to be cliche, well, light years ahead.
There's going to be a lot of social things that are people are going to be difficult to swallow. I'll tell you that, you know, I only saw this kind of the underbelly of it, but the space program's views on like sexuality are completely different than society's.
Okay, elaborate.
Well, the Germans on Ceres Colony believed that, and they had data because they were very meticulous about production, basically on because they had slaves and their own people that were military people. They wanted the most production out of people that they could get. And what they found was that humans that are sexually active are more productive than humans that aren't.
Okay.
Yeah. And I know that's controversial to say today. It's controversial, but you got to think that somebody that's sexually active has to kind of, you know, on a subconscious level, be aware that they may be become a parent.
Right.
And so they have to take a more proactive approach towards their environment, whereas somebody that can never be a parent because they're not having sexual activity can just react to the environment.
Deep.
I can see that.
Yeah. Well, that's what they believe. That's what they taught us. Whether it's right or wrong, I couldn't tell you, man.
Right.
But that's what they were telling us. They were like, you should go and have sex, and if you can't have sex with a girl, you should have sex with a guy. You know what I mean? They were like, sexual activity equals more production.
Just have sex.
Yes.
I like it. I can subscribe to that plan.
Yeah, I'm not gonna shake my finger at that.
Oh man. Well, Jesus. Do you think the moon landing happened like Apollo happened as we interpreted it,
as
back
we
then?
Saw on TV?
Yeah. Well, I think that they went a few times, and I think that they may have. You know, I'm not a believer in the moon faking. But I think that they may have faked some of it.
Okay.
Just you get what I'm saying? Like,
for
they might
TV.
Have filled it. Like, instead of showing the gigantic battleship, Draco battleship in the background, They cut that out and reenacted it and spliced. You get what I mean?
Yeah, I feel you.
Totally understand.
It was a splice job. It was like a Photoshop. They didn't have Photoshop, so they reenacted it in the studio so that they could splice it over the real deal. But we went to the moon. I know for a fact we went.
Okay.
I agree.
You can point a telescope at it and see it.
Yeah.
Right.
Nowadays. You can point a telescope at the moon and see the tracks that we laid.
Yeah. Oh, well.
I mean, just standing outside. I mean, you can plainly see it's it's so close.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jesus. In my opinion, here on Earth, we're completely fueled by exception and money and sex and likes, and that's kind of like what our society is driven by, mostly driven by money. What, in your experiences and your travels, what fueled the aliens on these other, all these places that you went? What were they fueled by? I know, like, we're money driven. What was their ultimate motive? I should ask.
They were technology. They were knowledge driven.
Okay.
So the interstellar currency is knowledge. Technology or knowledge.
Right.
And some species were way advanced, like way advanced, so where they didn't need, there are species out there that can manipulate matter with their mind. They can turn a banana, an apple kind of thing.
Okay.
With their minds. So it's knowledge.
In my research, I'm seeing that the Germans worked hand in hand with the Draconians, I believe is what I interpreted. What do these ETs, what did we have to trade with them here on Earth that they wanted from us to where they would do the favors and help the Germans further their technology?
We had people, labor. So
people like you.
Oh, excuse me, I need some water. Hang on.
You're fine.
Like, not only is a human being the most talented and energy efficient robot to do any task, to do many tasks, they're easy to come by. And not only is it yourself, but your consciousness can power other things. They can genetically whip up a creature that they need for some other task, and they can use your consciousness to drive it the same way. You know, they can take your consciousness out of you, and your spark of life is actually very valuable.
Okay. And that's kind of
I'm getting deep here, you know.
But that is deep, yeah, definitely.
That's really our currency is, you know, your spark of life, your mind, your consciousness is also a currency.
Yeah, and then I guess that makes sense if like the your experiences and what you went through, that would be ultimately what they would want. It's just people.
Pretty much what was going on, you know, with me, and I was just a laborer. I was a skill that I did ship repair, and then I did cargo, but you know, I guess it's just undesirable jobs. It's the Germans and the Draco are, you know, we're big on slavery.
Yeah.
Which, you know, personally, I mean, having been a slave for them, I'm not big on it. I feel that in the long run, when you talk about not a few hundred years or a thousand years, I feel in the long run, slavery is very self-defeating to a populace.
Yeah, undoubtedly.
It's kind of like, do you really want to live on the couch your whole life and have somebody feed you, or is it better to live a life where you get up and interact with the world? You know what I mean? It's far more healthier to do it yourself, kind of thing.
Yeah. So with people with similar situations, I don't think you could say people with similar situations with you, but people that have possibly have some regressed memories and they are having a hard time remembering certain things. What do you think has happened in your life differently that has allowed you such vivid recollection of these occurrences and all the things that you went through?
You know, I'm, man, that's a great question, man.
Yeah. Don't worry, I'm like retarded in real life, so
I may never
really work at these questions.
You know, I may never know the answer to that. Yeah. I think that at the end, right when they put me, you know, and the days before, like right up to the end, the last few days that I was up there, I knew I was going back. I knew they were going to blank my memory. I knew I was going back to a life that I didn't remember, that I didn't know. I didn't know where I was going, but I knew I was going back to a life on Earth. We all did. We all knew what was going on. We knew the situation, and I knew that they were going to blank my memory out, and I didn't want to forget it. I was just getting to the point in that life where it was tolerable.
Okay, and I did pick up that pick that you like had a girlfriend and you were able to travel.
I had a girlfriend, and you know what? For me, like it was a very, you know, when I was in Seattle living with the people, it was like being in an orphanage.
Yeah,
like nobody, there was no nurturing relationships for all those years. Like all my formative years in that time, from 10 years old into my 20s, I really didn't have any formative relationships. I didn't have any close friends.
Yeah, that's tough, man.
I didn't have any kind of parent, mother figures that really gave a shit about me. So right. It was a very emotionally black and white, very pale existence. It was terrible, you know?
Yeah.
And people live like that today. People grow up, like I said, or, you know, orphans and whatnot. And I had finally broke through that. I finally found somebody that, you know, loved me. I finally developed friendships with my coworkers that, you know, we got along. I was starting to snap out. And not only that, but the damage from the early years, the MK Ultra stuff, that was damaging mentally to me.
Fuck yeah.
That started to heal
right
at that point. And so for me, to start out at that starting point to where I was like a huge victory for me.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to leave it. I finally felt like I was becoming more of myself.
And then it was done.
And so the whole process, I was like, you know, I remember I flew back. They put me on a disc. It was an older disc. It was like grimy and dirty on the inside, but it was a disc. It was your straight up UFO. And that's how I flew back from Ceres to the moon for that process of when they, you know, when I went back and I paced the floor, and I was in the room with a few other, like six or seven other people going back. And I paced back and forth in the room the whole time. It was like something like 6 hour flight. And I was going, I'm not going to forget. I'm not going to forget. I'm going to remember all this. I'm not going to forget. And I was talking myself into it. And I think that, you know, maybe that made a difference
on the
other end. You know, maybe believing that I was going to remember let me remember better.
Is there certain processes maybe? I don't know. Like some people lean on meditation. Are there certain things that help you, I guess, certain states of mind you can put yourself in that put you in, I guess, a mode of remembering things? Or is it kind of just like all of a sudden, holy shit, you're walking through the mall and you say, oh my God.
That's kind of how it was.
Okay.
Like, right. I had for about 3 months straight a series of holy shit moments.
Yeah.
You know, one memory leads. Like, how old are you?
We're like 30. 33.
Oh, sorry, you cut up right before you asked. All we heard was, old are you?
Well, you're 33,
we're
right?
32
yeah.
and 33.
32, 33, yeah.
So where were you on your 13th birthday?
13th birthday. I cannot remember.
Probably getting my ass beat by my dad.
so look. So from the skeptical view, so you didn't turn 13?
Right. Well, exactly.
I'm kidding. That was a joke. But
no, I understand. I understand what you're saying.
What I'm
That's
saying
good.
Is you had a 13th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
You don't remember it right now. But if you did run into somebody that you spent that birthday with and they said, hey, remember that? And we were at so-and-so. We had some ice cream. All of a sudden, you'd get those memories. You'd go, holy shit. And I remember.
Very true.
We were, me and this guy were probably together and we don't remember.
Right.
Right. Well, what I'm saying is that's how it was, but it was on a much bigger, God. Holy shit, that happened. You know, like that was real.
Yeah, that's.
And then the rest of the memories happened. Like if at that point when you remember having ice cream together, then the rest of the day you'll start to remember that. And if you keep trying, you'll remember much of your 13th year, where you were that summer or winter, that month.
That's an amazing way to put it.
Probing. So that's what I always tell people too. Like when you get a keystone memory, everybody remembers one little thing. just keep dwelling on it and try to remember where you were earlier that day or where, what happened next. And
yeah.
keep dwelling on it. And then take a break. And, you know, like,
sure.
like think about it all day long. And for the next couple of days, purposely don't think about it. God. And memories will come. That's how, that's just a natural thing.
It's such a powerful analogy to
me. It makes perfect sense.
That's what it was like. That was what the experience was like. Only I was remembering years and years all at once. You know, like it was just overwhelming. I mean, like I was pulling over on the side of the road, on the side of the highway.
Yeah.
And bawling into tears, you know, like I was just like, I didn't know what to do. I was freaking out, you know, and my wife, you know, at the time she's one of those, like, bless her heart. She's one of those people that was like, well, if aliens are real, they'd be in the Bible.
Okay. Oh yeah. Okay.
So I, you know, that you can understand that me saying, well, listen, I worked on a spaceship for 12 years. Look, you know, and looking out the night, like, see that star right there? I've been there.
Yeah.
And so that was tough. There was really nobody to talk to. And that's why I reached out to the early researchers in the beginning, because I just wanted to talk to somebody.
Absolutely. Man. And I've heard the analogy with Christianity where I've heard pastors talk, like, when they talk in the instance of faith, you know, people believe in God, people believe in divine intervention, all this stuff. But yet you've never really, have you ever seen God? Like, you think you've felt God, but have you ever actually seen this man that you call God? Like, whenever you call someone on the phone, you hear their voice, but is that really them? Because you're not there to see them on the phone, but you know, you have faith that that person is there because you can hear them. But
people believe in God. People believe in God. I'll tell you this, because when you go to church and everybody is meditating, unbeknownst to them, while they're praying. It's when you pray in a group, it's a group meditation, and it creates a vibe. When it's a Christ consciousness access, it's like, just like it's a radio signal, just like a stereo. It's a certain frequency on the stereo that everybody gets to, and it's a great vibe. They feel it. They can feel it. And then sure. the rest of the day, you have like a great day. And so they go, yes. And then, so whatever they're preaching, it doesn't matter what it is, makes perfect sense, because they go, man, I felt great whenever we talk about that stuff, because they're in a group meditation. That's what church is doing. You know? And I'm not just debunking God. I'm not saying that.
You can debunk
that,
God on this. The podcast to do it, buddy.
Beyond the words. The core of the belief, because they can feel that something is there. Something is happening, you know, and they just are unaware that it's a group meditation. They're actually accessing a frequency of God. Christ consciousness, or whatever you want to call it. Everybody's, there's a billion names for it, but they're accessing that, and it feels good. And so they believe that's what strengthens their faith. And then, so the message, what the preacher's saying, is really kind of, I don't want to say it's irrelevant, but it's less relevant than what they think it is.
Jesus.
Because it's really all of them being on the same mental page that's creating that feeling.
That's deep. Very deep.
Wow. I don't believe I said that.
No, it's fine. It's good. My research stops at kind of towards the end of your career in the 20 and back program, when you're on series and you're venturing out during the day and riding the trains to visit your girlfriend. Are there any substantial occurrences that are left out from the point from that point until the moment you came back to your Tony life?
There was a lot that happened in that time. You know, like I went from having a groundhog day of hard labor, kind of like being in prison with hard labor. I went from that to having, you know, a 9-to-5 job and having some little bit of freedom. And I've done, I'm coming up on probably 80 interviews in the last 4 years.
Yeah.
And so I talk about different stuff in each one. So I don't know what anymore. I don't remember everything that I've said publicly or not.
Right. I understand.
You know, each one, I think, covers a different part of things that happened to me. There's a lot that I don't talk about. You know, I mean, there was personal stuff there.
Sure, I understand.
A lot of people just don't ask about what life was, and we don't get that far because we're still talking about Mars.
Yeah, we haven't asked you about Mars at all, Tony.
Thanks for that. I was only there about 6 months.
Do you, like, just there towards the end of your 20 and back career, was it just you sitting in a dorm, or did you have a house, or did you, you know, what
sorry,
was,
you broke up a little?
Like towards the end of
it was the same place. It was like a prison, but without bars.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Like when you look on TV and they show a prison, a modern prison, it wasn't really like that. But it was like a layout. Like imagine stacks, you know, hallways, a few hundred feet long, and on each side rows of 5 by 10 rooms. With no door, just it was open. It was the three walls, and inside there was a cot and a little like not a dresser, but like a shelf with a little drawer. All that you would go in, and if I came, and you could come in at any time of the night, like after everybody was asleep. And my individual, you checked in with an officer at the end at the entrance, and they would turn on your room and my light, and you had 5 minutes. I had 5 minutes to go back to my bed, get in there. The light would shut out. And then in the morning, a buzzer would go off and all the lights would come on. We had to get up and go shower, brush your teeth, and you got checked out. You know, somebody checked you and you started getting long hair. They'd make you go to the barber right then and there.
Okay.
And they did your clothes for, like, I didn't have a wardrobe. I had a hook with the clothes that I was wearing, my pajamas or whatever, would go. I would hang them on a hook, and in the morning on my hook with my number on it was my outfit for that day hanging there.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Do you remember what the food was like? Was it good?
Slimy. It was gross.
Oh, really?
It was replicated, and our food was like, it was always a slimy version of whatever meal it was supposed to be. Thanksgiving dinner, for instance, if you had a turkey and mashed potatoes and gravy, it was slimy. It was like a, you know, and it was replicated. It was a machine made it.
Okay. These guys, these shithead aliens, they can do telepathy and all these awesome, amazing things, but they cook like Helen Keller. They can't cook.
Well, it was replicated food, but the thing is, so for the Ceres colony of the Germans there, they were still, like, they had a version of free energy, but there was only so much of it. They were leasing it from another species to come and maintain and run the thing.
So you were like,
that's like, it's a business. But I don't think that's exactly what it was. But basically, they had generators that were big generators that powered the place, and they only had it was all about power output, and they didn't want to use all their, you know what I mean, like.
Oh, okay, I got you.
They didn't want us to have all the lights on all the time, and you know they didn't want their slaves using a lot of power output.
They're just like a dad in Midwest America.
Absolutely. Exactly.
So you were like you were just property of the Germans, essentially, and then the Germans worked for the aliens, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
That's pretty much it.
And that's what I don't want to get people confused, like you reported to an alien every day. You reported to human Germans, and they essentially worked for the aliens.
Well, and the ones that were there were command, and they did go through their own 20 and back, their own version of it, which was, there are different ways to achieve that technology where you live and then you go back to where you started. But the ones that were in command, the command crew and the people that ran everything there, they were born there, or they were indigenous to Ceres. Like, they live there, and when they're done with their 20 back, they're still there.
Okay.
So the labor, the slave labor, and a lot of the help that they brought in was from Earth.
I gotcha. Man. I think that it's so much to process.
It really
is a lot. And just, we only have a few more questions here. And I appreciate you going over the 20 to 30 minutes I quoted you, Tony. Do you have to run right now? Or are you okay?
No, I'm fine.
Okay. All right. How have your, partners here on Earth, how have they handled when, I don't know, I know you spoke about your wife. I don't know, you don't have to go in detail about that, but how have your partners handled you coming out with these experiences?
Oh, I don't know, man. It's kind of like I have a dual thing going on where I have my normal life.
Yeah.
That doesn't intermix. And, you know, I've had people in my life that, friends and family that I know about my interviews.
Yeah.
that won't talk to me about it.
I understand.
Like, I'm just kind of sitting, like I said, anybody that asks me, you can ask me anything, you know, and I'll tell you, because if you're skeptical and get abusive or something, I will entertain that. People that are skeptical, I like to talk to them about it because it helps me understand it too. Right. So anybody that asks me, I'll talk about it freely, but I found that a lot of people that know about it won't talk to me about it because I think they're afraid that I might be right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You get what I'm saying? Like,
people are scared
when they're quiet and amongst themselves, they go, oh, that's bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, he's full of shit. He's crazy or whatever.
Right.
But if they talk to me, I might present them with the evidence and they might have to realize that it's real. And I think like I said, for people that are doing well in the system, that's a hard pill to swallow.
Yeah.
The system is bullshit.
People don't want to have to think about changing life every day as we know it. There's something that could ultimately change the entire trajectory of everything we're trying to accomplish or trying to change the trajectory of you waking up, going to work every day, retiring, and then dying. That there's something, that there might be something else that the change.
Exactly. Like right now, people are chasing a number.
Yeah.
They're chasing a sum. Really, a lot of people, that's really what it amounts to. They are chasing a sum.
Right.
And that's the extent of their life. And, you know, I mean, roundabout way, their goal for life is no goal at all.
No.
And if you start thinking about your consciousness growing and incarnating into other more advanced beings, like it's a very big, it's a very, very, very huge cover over our heads that we're the top of the food chain.
Okay.
That's a very integral part to the lie, because
yeah.
With that, then you don't aspire to be anything better. If you're a human and humans are the best that there is, then you don't have to do anything to make yourself any better.
Right.
But if we knew that there were humans that live 1,000 years, humans that are telepathic, humans that are more talented, humans that are healthier, that you know what I'm saying, that are not violent. And those give you things that you could work on to become better. And so it's hidden from us.
Sure.
You get what I mean?
Yeah.
So a lot of people are chasing the wrong thing. They're chasing the wrong goal, because the real goal for every living thing is to advance, to grow. And
right.
not your bank account, but to grow your consciousness into a bigger thing.
Right.
You know, that's really what's going on, you know. And so I think a lot of people would have to look back on their whole entire life. Imagine people that paid $250,000 for college to find out that they got super lied to. You know?
What a way to put it. That's fucking awesome. What's your advice for someone that believes they might have repressed memories similar to what you're dealing with, and they're looking for an outlet? What's your advice to someone possibly going through something like that?
There's a lot of different people that come forward, and they all have, it seems like, you know, everybody has their own tech. It's like learning how to be, you know, to train for the NBA, you know, when you're in college. Every player has his own training regimen that makes him a good player. You know, some guys run laps and some guys have weird things that they do, but it's, you know, it's your own way to get to achieve a means to an end. And the biggest thing you can do is, firstly, anybody that's been through the programs has been given what Jason Royce called parting gifts, which make it very hard for you to write it down.
Okay.
Everybody gets super sleepy when they write about the subject.
Okay.
And so there are you've been programmed on the exit, during the exit, when they blank slate you, they program you to not pursue remembering. And so that's the very first thing you have to remember. What I tell people is, like, if you're – number one, you have to write up a timeline so that you can make sense of it all, and you can add to it later, and you can delete things that may be wrong, for one. And for two, it's very hard to write a timeline on because you've been programmed not to. So the best time to do it is first thing in the morning when you wake up, and only for a few minutes. It's like a muscle.
God, yeah. Wild. You'll
start to be drowsy or distracted. Quit and wait till the next day when you wake up, because when you wake up, you've forgotten about everything that you thought about the day before, and you can trick yourself. And that's why I love the questions. When you ask me questions about something, it tricks that programming, because I don't expect the question, and I can instantly think of the answer before the programming has a chance to, you know, confuse.
Insane.
So that's what I tell people. That for me, that's been the best thing. Meditation works. Blank your
mind
thoughts out for a minute. And then when you do get a memory, a lot of people have a physical memory. Usually when people are abducted, they don't blank that first few seconds of abduction. Seeing the craft or seeing an ET, everybody goes, man, I saw it. And then I don't know what happened after that. Right? How many ET ET experiences have you heard that? Man, the car pulled over, the power went out, and then we saw a craft, and then I woke up and it was an hour later. I don't know what happened.
It's just always a loss of time following after that.
Yeah, everybody doesn't know what happened, though. Everybody's like, man, I don't know what happened after that.
Right.
Because they got blank slated, because they got taken for whatever it was.
Sure.
And blanks, they could have been gone for 40 years.
And then to the outside person that has no idea, it makes the person seem less credible whenever they just go, oh, I don't know. So then they're all...
You know, so for that, I say, focus on that memory. Focus on the memory that's strong. So you saw the craft, draw a picture of it, write it down.
Yeah.
Write a story, write an essay about that craft. Draw a picture of it again. Wait a month. Don't think about it at all. Wait a month and do it again. And more memories will slowly pry those memories loose. The other thing that really discredits everybody is that I found that the world, from dealing with people from all over the world seems to be cut up to the ETs.
Okay.
The world seems to have zones where certain ETs interact, and they interact in this zone and not in that zone.
Right.
So that when...
It's like Bloods and Crips.
Greatly different. What's that?
I said it's like Bloods and Crips.
Yeah, exactly. And they're like, wait a minute, exactly. And to metaphor that, they go, the researcher goes, so what did you see? And they said, well, man, I was in the room. Everything was blue. They had blue flags and blue shirts and blue. And then the researcher asked somebody else, and they go, no. They had red flags, and they had red suits on. And the researcher goes, well, one of you is full of shit.
Yeah,
right.
And really, the fact is, there are endless amounts of programs that are coming, visiting ETs at different levels of technology. So some people are taken, and they're sticking a probe up your nose. And some people are taken, and they don't even know what happened. They just felt peaceful. And it was, I saw things I could see through the wall, because there are different levels of technology that are taking people as well.
And we can't sleep on the fact a lot of people claim to have stuff shoved up their ass too, just because.
Well, that's how they retrieve the nanites, because the walls of your colon are porous.
Wow, I never even knew that there was a reason for. I'm glad that, man. What are you said nanites?
Nanites, yeah.
What are nanites?
You know, microscopic robots.
Okay,
robots.
Yeah.
What they do is they could, in my case, they injected me with nanites, and they were building things inside of me with them, implants. And rather than going in and cutting you and putting a big piece of hardware in you, they put nanites in you, and then they turn into the hardware, and then they flush them out through your colon, and that's what that is.
I can't believe it all makes sense to me now.
I totally regret saying that in public.
No, you're fine, dude.
But,
that's what this podcast
the other thing is
for.
So the nanites only worked on the table. So they had remote power. Like, there was a magnetic field that powered them.
Okay.
So if I would have got off the table, the nanites would have not been powered. It just been in my bloodstream. I just lay still on the table while they were working.
So you like have a half facility, like a half a city built inside your body because these nanites quit working.
They didn't really explain to me what was going on other than there's little robots working on me.
Yeah. Think about the science. We need that science right now. Think of how much we could progress medically if we had that science here right now.
Oh, it's coming. Yeah. And to me, I'm very hopeful. I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know what's going on. I'm not currently, as far as I know, involved with any program.
Sure.
And I don't have anybody on the inside telling me stuff. So I'm very hopeful that we get a disclosure and we get a big leap of technology, like a huge leap.
You need to think about
I think we could handle it,
For sure. I think we're moving towards it. We're pacing towards it, undoubtedly. I just, within the same breath of that progression, I think we're going to have a lot of rednecks die because they're just going to be like, ain't nobody going near my butt with nothing. We have all this new nanite. We have this awesome new science, this new medical everything, all the progression we've made, and these guys just die because they're they don't want anything near their butt. Now my dad, he's the same way. He's 60. I said, "You have your colon checked, Dad?" He said, "I ain't never doing that shit, boy." Well, my last question here, Tony, and Rob may have one, I'm not sure.
I just have one other one. But
what you, and this is kind of in the spirit of humor, you probably get a lot of people that reach out to you, that come to you with different experiences. How often do you feel like they're just making things up to have the conversation with you? Or how often do you feel like...
I think it happens. I think it happens a lot. And a lot of people mirror what I've said back to me. Yeah. But what I think that a lot of people, had something happen. And so, I've got to choose my words carefully here. I believe that everybody that reaches out to me, when they tell me that they had something happen to them, I take it at face value, man, because I have to, because, you're an adult. I'm going to go ahead and trust you. A lot of people lie, but I'm not going to call everybody I ever meet a liar. I'd rather err on the side of to people. So when people tell me something happened to them, I want to hear more. I want to prove it. I want to help, because what they want is substantiation.
Okay. Yeah.
They're getting hold of me saying, and they're waiting on me to go, yes, that's exactly right.
Right.
I think so, at least. But I think that a lot of people had something happen and their memories are a mess.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
In order to prove it to me, they dump a lot of stuff on me and some of it's wrong.
Yeah,
I think that's happened a lot. A lot of people contact me. They tell me things that I know. I don't say it, but I know that they're close to the mark, but not exactly. I didn't go like that. But I think that, I still believe that something happened to them. I think that they're, for me, it's an ongoing process. I'm still remembering. And for them, they've begun an ongoing process. They're going to begin remembering for the rest of their life.
Yeah.
You get what I mean?
And I feel you.
In the beginning, I got a lot of things confused with researchers. I got a few things wrong. And it was because my memories were coming back out of order. That's why a timeline is such a big deal. My memories came back in kind of an out of order thing all at once. And I was putting them together and it was just, I had the order wrong kind of thing.
Right.
And I think a lot of people do that. So I think some people, I haven't had anybody really go jerk my chain and then go, gotcha, you're dummy. I haven't had anything like that. I've had a few people that were like abusive to me right out of the gate, and I just block them,
Well, in this, I guess the same breath for us.
Breaking up there.
I'm saying in the same breath for us, we talk about a lot of weird stuff on the show, and it opens up the line of communication. We had a lot of people that come to us just like, I can talk to squirrels, and we just get all kinds of weird people that can reach out. And I'm like, Jesus, you need a doctor, like you need medicine. If you could prescribe mental health, I guess, stuff for people that talk to squirrels, you probably would have done a lot of that by now, Tony.
Not too much.
Okay.
I've had a few people that were probably needed some mental help, a handful. That were emotionally, they had, they could tell that they were not only telling their story, but emotionally just like not right.
Yeah.
And I just kind of let them figure it out. firstly, I'm not a researcher.
Sure.
Secondly, I'm not a doctor or a professional at this.
Right.
I hear people out and I tell them my opinion. That's all I got.
Yeah.
And so people that are emotional, I've told a few people like, hey man, I think you're taking this too far. Don't let it beyond that, you're kind of being a dick to me.
Right.
And, I've done that and then I just quit talking to them.
Yeah.
Like I said, people that have problems, when you tell them the truth, they have a hard time accepting it and they're mad.
Okay.
That's about the only run. Everybody else has been pretty down to earth, even with really crazy stuff. And I've heard some stuff that makes things that I went through look tame.
I need to talk to those people.
My last question I would say is going to be, this is one I usually always like to ask. What would you say, probability wise, and this is typically how things go whenever we talk about these deep government op programs. What would you say is the probability that something like this is still currently going on? Something that you experience, like these things that you experience, is still currently going on right now?
Probability is 100%.
That's exactly what I figured.
Yeah. Oh, it's going on now. There are ongoing programs. They try to act like everything's shut down or this or that. There are ongoing programs. People are still going. There are people up there that are going to come back. There are people that are being taken tonight.
Whew. I hope I get this podcast out in time.
You kind of always assume that's the way that it goes, because with all these different secret programs getting declassified and renamed and classified again, it's just the same. But you know, with the whole MK Ultra thing, I mean, I'm sure it's still going. It's just named differently, right? Exactly.
Yeah, right. Like, well, and I think that, so this was, you know, I was in 81.
Right. Well, I mean, especially if they're striking gold off of these things.
Yeah. But you get what I'm saying? Like these were people, humans, so not at the top of their technological game really. And back in 81 and 82 that went through this. So by now you got to think it's grown leaps and bounds.
Exactly.
And so they've got it down to something way better than what it is. And you know what? Honestly, look at it. Aren't we all being traumatized? Have you seen TV lately?
Oh yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, shows are coming out that are super grotesque and hard to watch. Like, the violence is like on another level nowadays.
Yeah, you're right.
In entertainment, it's not like it. You know. There was romance. Now it's just gore. I mean, it's not even violence. It's like straight up gore happening.
Yeah, I remember like back in our childhood when the height of, you know, Beavis and Butthead and Mortal Kombat, like that was like super edgy and moms were going crazy. And now it's tame. Yeah.
Kill hookers in a car and video games and Grand Theft Auto.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, they were desensitized. And
exactly.
You got to think it's got to take a toll. That stuff has got to be very damaging to be exposed to it all the time, you know, violence like on that level. Well, and the thing is, it's not because it sells, because let me tell you, I'm not going to go to the movie theater and go, you know what, this one is super gory. I think he rips his spine out. I'm going to go see this.
Let's watch that one.
Beautiful visuals.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's absolutely not because it sells tickets that
you're
they're
right.
doing that.
You're right. There's other reasons. There's ulterior motives.
There's something going on, right? There's something else.
Well, what's the you did mention that you're working on a book. When's the projected date that we can start looking for that?
In my mind, I feel like I'm going to sit down one weekend and just blurt it all out.
Yeah.
But it's very hard to do. I want it to be comprehensive, and it's like, I don't know. I'm just kind of waiting on a feeling of readiness, and it's a very difficult thing to do.
Yeah. I understand.
So, I mean, if you're asking if I'm progressed to the point where I have a date, I don't.
Okay.
Okay.
You're fine. Is there a way that any of our listeners can hook up with you? You got a Twitter or anything you want to put out there?
I'm on Facebook. I have Facebook, and that's where I contact.
Okay.
Most people have contacted me.
That's where I found you, and I didn't want to. Some people don't like to open the floodgates. Exactly. So.
It's not so bad. Yeah.
Okay.
You know what happens is like interviews will come out, and I'll do an interview and it'll get edited for a week or two and it'll be quiet, and the interviews come out and I get a week or two of heavy Facebook traffic.
Yeah.
Sometimes I can keep up with everybody. Sometimes I can't. It's difficult. People message me and then their message gets buried behind 10 other people, and I get back and forth, and I'm hoping to get a website up.
Sure.
Actually, somebody offered to do a website for me. And I'll put a place there that'll be a contact. I'd like to have an anonymous forum.
Yeah,
that'd be great.
To speak. And I'd like to put a temporary, an example of a timeline for people to do.
Yeah.
But I will eventually have a website. And what I'm going to do is that'll be a link to all my interviews and just a rough, you know, my story and kind of resources for that.
Sure.
That sounds great.
Well, Tony, I asked you for a half an hour and you gave me an hour and a half. So I couldn't be more appreciative, man. That we're so excited we got to sit down with you. Even if, you know, we're from Ohio and you're from Michigan, I think we got along just fine.
Wait, you're Buckeyes?
It's the name of the show you're on is called the Brohio Podcast, Tony.
You guys are Buckeyes?
Yeah, we're Rob doesn't watch sports at all, and I'm like a casual Buckeye. I'm a baseball and NFL guy. So
okay, man, I won't close the window.
All fairness,
I'll just say that I was born in Ann Arbor.
Okay. Oh, shit. I dislike 98% of Ohio State fans, so it's okay.
Yeah, right. Well, it hasn't been a fair rivalry lately, but
no,
yeah.
I wish it was a more sporting thing, but
I think your coach Harbaugh, he would be really fun. He's definitely been fucking abducted for sure. There's something wrong with that guy.
That's funny.
All right, Tony. Well,
we appreciate your time.
Take care, man.
Breaking up on me. You guys too. Let me know. Give me the link when it's done, and
sure.
I'd like to share it to myself. And,
all right.
And thank you.
Yeah, you have a listen. You might listen to some of our other goofy shit. So
yes, I definitely will.
All right, thank you, sir.
Thanks.
We appreciate you.
Okay, you bet. Take care.
Yep,
you
too.
Okay.
Cool.
That was, I don't know how long we intended. And one thing I will say, we don't normally edit our episodes.
Right.
We might not be able to release this tomorrow because I'm definitely going to have to go through this and
chop
it out. But I think the one thing that I will say, I think we will get like a straight, sorry, I got a farting back there.
No, it's okay.
We'll get an unbroken up copy from Zoom
right
there. That might be a sub in. But he talked about, like, ever since I started doing this, my electronics are shit. And
right.
It came off and on the entire time.
It was
glitching out. But
it's all right.
We still got an incredible interview. We're very thankful for Tony Rodriguez.
Rodriguez.
Yeah. Okay. God damn it. I'm not going to remember that.
No, it's going to be a rough one.
Yeah, thank you so much, Tony.
It's awesome for him to take the time out to do.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Especially an hour more than what we asked for.
Yeah. So, all right, Rob, that's the end of this episode.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. We love you.